We're talking with mayors from all over Wisconsin as part of a series of conversations here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We start in Wausau, the heart of Wisconsin, as they call it in Marathon County. Wausau's population hovers north of 39,000 residents. Looking at the U.S. Census data, Wausau grew more diverse over the past decade and had modest growth, about 900 people higher than the 2010 census. Do you live in Wausau or in north central Wisconsin? What issues are most pressing? In Wausau and elsewhere, how are medium-sized cities changing? 800-642-1234. Katie Rosenberg was elected mayor of Wausau in April of 2020. Mayor Rosenberg, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Hey, thank you so much for having me this morning. How's it going?
I'm doing well. Let's start with the pandemic. And as you're well aware, the pandemic has been going on for nearly 2 years now. Marathon County has had almost 20,000 COVID cases, 233 deaths. How has the pandemic changed Wausau?
You know, I think, first of all, obviously we've lost people, and we're very sad about that. Obviously 200 people is a lot for a community our size. But, you know, we're also trying to figure out how do we work together to fight this pandemic. So, you know, I've partnered with our friends in the county government, with our health department. We've been trying to get information out, trying to get as many people vaccinated as would like to be, making sure they have access, making sure that they have information about the pandemic and how to help yourselves in the language that they speak. So, you know, it's been quite a challenge. I think last year it felt the newness of it kind of spurred us to try new things. We did drive-through voting to make sure that people could stay safe. But, you know, now being the second year of this, I mean, people are done. They're tired of it. And so it's been a struggle to kind of keep people moving forward and trying to protect themselves and others. So I don't think we're different than any other community. But I do think, you know, people are ready to kick this thing.
Yeah. Can you help us trace the federal dollars? What federal financial aid is reaching Wausau? What are you getting from the federal government and how are you using the money?
Sure. So last year, just like other communities, we got a ton of CARES dollars. So that really helped us. You know, we hired, you know, in the early stages of the pandemic, it seemed kind of quaint to talk about all the service cleaning we did, all the extra, you know, we hired extra people in City Hall to make sure that we were cleaning all those services. And then we built in protective barriers for staff. We paid for a ton of PPE. And actually, that's one of those increasing costs right now. If you didn't know that the cost of these gloves that our emergency workers need have increased a ridiculous amount. So, you know, we've paid for a lot of that. But I think the more interesting stuff that we're talking about now would be with the ARPA funding, the American Rescue Plan. And, you know, we've only spent about 300,000. And again, like when I say only 300,000, that's kind of a crazy thing to say, but we've spent that on an affordable housing project. But we in total will have about $15.6 million to spend until 2024. So we're working with the council to decide what kind of projects we'd like to pursue. You know, staff have a ton of really great ideas on how we can help kind of jumpstart our economy and make sure that we're reaching everybody. But I think affordable housing, again, we're not abnormal than any other community. This is a comment that I heard across the board at the latest league conference. So, you know, affordable housing is going to be important, addressing homelessness, making sure that folks have access to the kinds of wraparound services they need. You know, daycare is a huge discussion point right now. So, you know, we have a lot of opportunity ahead.
We're going to talk about housing in a moment, but it sounds as if your community is really taking the time to slow down and figure out where best to put these funds and not just, you know, have them in and out the door very quickly.
Right. So that was some advice. You know, we've, I think between all of us at City Hall, we've attended so many webinars from, you know, financial people and from, you know, the League of Wisconsin Municipalities. You know, I'm a member of the U.S. Conference of Mayors and Mayors Innovation Project. So, you know, we're hearing from a lot of people. And you know, when you have a sum of money and you want to do good, there's this natural kind of desire to do something right away. And I think we were able to do some of that with our affordable housing project. But you know, with Washington discussing the infrastructure bill and the American Families Plan, we want to make sure that we're maximizing our opportunities. And I think the other thing that I really want to do is make sure we're partnering with our county partners. They have $25 million. So are there opportunities for us to figure out where we can work together and collaborate and make that money go further for our shared constituents?
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Wausau Mayor Katie Rosenberg in a first of our series of conversations with mayors from around Wisconsin. You can join in. Do you live in Wausau or in Marathon County? What questions, what suggestions do you have for Mayor Rosenberg? 800-642-1234. Wausau had made news earlier this year over the city government's efforts to declare a community for all. Why was it important for Wausau to make this declaration?
Yeah, you know, I hadn't really been paying attention to the county's efforts until I got a phone call from the New York Times reporter who was talking about it. And at that point, I was like, wow, national media is paying attention to our community about our, you know, action and, you know, as it stood in action. So once that article was published, I felt that it was really important that the city of Wausau took a strong stance that we are here for our community, everyone in our community, no matter what your background, no matter what you look like, no matter your ability. And I felt that, you know, while some of the, I mean, everyone's responsible for their comments, but that article really kind of hit me. It took the breath away. So I wanted to make sure that folks knew that we were here for them and that Wausau was going to take that stance. So, I mean, it's a complicated topic when it comes to taking a stance like that against a body that I was a part of last year. So that was a challenge too, but it's too important. You know, my parents and my grandparents always told me that you have to stick up for people. So that's what we were doing.
The proclamation has 11 whereas is, if the plural of whereas yep. is a word. Regardless, the fourth one calls out this New York Times article from May, and the headline is "A Community for All, Not So Fast," this Wisconsin county says. What did that article do to you and your residents?
Yeah, well, I would say fast and furious. When I checked my phone in the morning, the emails were already starting to come in from across the nation, basically blasting us. Because, you know, the headline said Wausau, Wisconsin. It didn't say Marathon County, Wisconsin. So I am probably the first person they Googled when they Googled elected officials in Wausau. So I heard from the community across the nation. I heard from my own community asking, what are you going to do about this? And, you know, so that was what spurred me that this deserves a response. This is big. And we need to stand up for our values. So, you know, I also, I called the reporter back and I said, you know, I'm very concerned about how the light this puts us in. You know, and again, like I wasn't quoted in that article. It was my former colleagues on the county board and other people in our community. But eventually they did a follow-up article and I was able to kind of speak my piece. But, you know, by that time, it's kind of seeped into our community and a lot of people had formed their opinions on it. But I would say across the board, it's not a partisan issue across the board. I heard from folks from every political ideology that they were disappointed by this.
Let me read another whereas. Wausau seeks to create a community environment where all residents can celebrate and embrace their rich multicultural heritage without the fear of intimidation or hate-motivated violence. And you wrote this as hate crimes have surged. How do you put those words into action?
Yeah, so I think part of it is, on the one hand, being aware that this is happening to people. I talked a bit to our the CEO or the president of our local Hmong American Center, and we talked about some of the things that he'd heard, the reaction to some of the COVID questions and things like that that his communities has been having. So, you know, it was important that A, people need to know this is happening to people in our community, that we care that they feel that they belong, and that's unacceptable. So calling that out. But I think also it kind of, it offers a lens through which we can look at our policymaking. You know, kind of at the same time, we've been talking in Wausau about environmental justice and what that looks like. And again, that's just another lens through which we can say, are we helping the people that we claim that we want to help? And this is how we will make sure that we're doing this. So I think it's a multi-step process, and we're never going to, you know, get there, but we're going to keep trying to access the best parts of ourselves when we're working on those policies.
Wausau Mayor Katie Rosenberg talking about the issues she takes on in her city. It's part of a series of conversations we're having with mayors from all over Wisconsin. How do you think that cities should try to prevent and prepare for climate change? Should cities reform their police departments? What would you like to see happen? How should cities address a shortage of affordable housing? We'll talk about that. Join in 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Mayor Rosenberg here on the Ideas Network. We're in conversation with mayors from all over Wisconsin here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and we start this series with Mayor Katie Rosenberg of Wausau. Earlier this year, as we were talking about, she signed a proclamation making Wausau a community for all, taking a very public stance to condemn hate and racist acts and celebrate diversity. Has your community taken steps to be more inclusive? Has your city started anti-racism work? What has changed? How are you involved? How is your city creating more robust safety nets for residents in need? 800-642-1234. Mayor Katie Rosenberg with us for about 9 more minutes. Mayor, I want to talk about affordable housing. Cities all over the country have faced a shortage of affordable housing, some worse than others. What is Wausau doing about this issue?
Yeah, so we need affordable housing desperately. You know, we did a lot of work maybe 15 years ago, and some of those projects that would require them to stay in certain limits, those tax credit projects are expiring. So the landlords and the owners of those projects get to decide how they want to continue. So we're feeling the pinch. So we actually created an affordable housing task force that will explore this issue. It's something that's complex, and, you know, there are different solutions for different things, and there are people that need different things. So again, a task force is great, and that's, I feel like I've created a couple of those during my tenure, but it will take time for us to figure out those solutions. So in the meantime, we're looking at what developers need in order to work with us. And actually yesterday at one of our committee meetings, we had a really great presentation from a developer who's interested in working with us on an affordable housing project. So I'm really excited. I'm holding out hope for some of that. But again, it's tough. And, you know, the incentives that you need to work on are something that the community needs to agree to, too.
Is it the aging housing stock that is a concern, or are new developments going up?
Yeah, so it's all of it. So we do have aging housing stock. You know, that's in tandem with this discussion, we're talking about how to remove all the lead laterals from homes too. So we're doing that on our side, and we're encouraging city residents to also replace theirs so we can get the lead out of the pipes. Again, because we have old houses, most of our houses were built before the 70s, at least in some of the older part of the city. So there's that. We also do have new developments going up. And as soon as they open, they're filling up. And we're looking at that kind of like the way you look at a used car situation, right? So somebody needs to buy a new car in order for that used car to be available. So we need all of it at the same time. And there's just this really big pinch right now.
You mentioned childcare earlier. Does Wausau face childcare deserts? What is the situation there?
Yeah, so this is something that I had been exploring during my tenure on the county board as well. But, you know, since the last recession, I talked to DHS. They said that Marathon County lost 55% of their childcare operations after that recession, and we still haven't really come back up to where we need to be. And obviously during last year's pandemic and the fears around that, I mean, people are struggling to find places for their kids. And when they do find places, it's very expensive. I have heard that folks are moving home to Wausau because while it's expensive here, maybe $200 a week, it's not as expensive as the places that they are in living now, maybe Madison or wherever. So there's a little bit of that, but we still need more. And I know that that's something I've been pushing for with the American Families Plan, been advocating for childcare, especially because that the care for children falls largely on women. And we want to make sure that if there's women that want to find purpose, if they want to re-enter the workforce, if they have other things they need to do, that they have that option and that flexibility and that childcare is available to them.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Wausau Mayor Katie Rosenberg in the first of our series of conversations with mayors from around Wisconsin. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Wausau is working on a pilot project that would provide guaranteed income to a small number of families. What is the status of this pilot program?
Yeah, so very exciting. So we're working through the Mayors for a Guaranteed Income. And we were given $100,000. Well, they allocated $100,000 for us to implement this pilot program and research project. So I was ready to go off and running immediately in January when the council approved it. But, you know, we have different laws here in Wisconsin than they do in the other states where they've implemented this. So it's been a little bit slower going than what I would like. But we're going to do it the right way. One of the situations that we ran into was that when folks get, you know, their Badger Care or maybe food stamps or things like that, if they get money, even if it's a gift, they could lose eligibility for some of those programs. And the point of this is to help people, not hurt them. So we're working on what that program looks like so that we're not hurting people. I've been talking to some of the other mayors who were involved in this program in other cities. And, you know, we're looking at, is there a way we can work with the legislature to maybe find a waiver so that we can implement this pilot program? So we'll see what happens there. But it's a little slower going than I wanted. But the intention is to follow the Stockton pilot program and add to the body of science when it comes to this guaranteed income.
I want to mention social media. You've gotten a lot of attention for how you use social media. Why is it important to engage? Because that platform and social media can be very hurtful.
Oh, yeah. Social media is both incredibly amazing in the way you can connect with folks, but also there's a lot of very easy access for people with ill intents, right? Trolls, all of that. So, my goal on social media is to inform and educate, maybe entertain. I also want to show people who I am as a person and as a mayor. And, you know, a lot of the stuff when it comes to trolls and all of that, I let it go. I don't respond to it. So if you see people saying mean things to me, you will see that I also don't respond to that. So, you know, I think that I want to use it in the way I hope others use it, to share ideas and have a good conversation. But yeah, it can be a hard place to be some days.
Has it been important for you to have that as the pandemic unfolds in your community and being able to reach people where they're at?
Yeah, totally. And, you know, I noticed that even during my campaign, when we stopped knocking on doors because of the pandemic, you know, we became worried about how do we reach people? You know, because people are indoors, but they're also, I'm sure everyone just is like me and their social media use skyrocketed. So, you know, we kind of pivoted, we used video, and that's kind of what we're doing now during my tenure here is we're expanding our use of video and making sure that folks know what's going on.
I want to land on Governor Evers being in your city today with you this morning, discussing the people's maps and his commission to draw the political boundaries. What are your thoughts on redistricting?
Yeah, I think we need to have a fair and neutral process. And, you know, I pushed for that on the county board, and I will continue pushing for that. I think that we all deserve the representation and competitive races. And so I'm excited to support this project with him
How much overlap do you have with the governor, or, you know, as you work to collaborate and break down silos?
Yeah, you know, he will pop by for various things. I act like we're buddies. No, but he, you know, a lot of what they do, it feels to me like when I was on county board, a lot of what the state did was very impactful all the time, because they could only tell the county what we could do and we couldn't do anything outside of this. Now we have a little bit more flexibility with the city, but I would love to collaborate more with our legislators, with our governor, whatever we can do to make sure that the people of Wausau are very well represented, both here and in Madison. So, you know, we've been working on a couple of things, but yeah.
Mayor Katie Rosenberg, thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me. I appreciate it.
Katie Rosenberg, elected mayor of Wausau in April 2020. What mayor in Wisconsin would you suggest we talk to? Make a suggestion by completing a two-question form at WPR.org/mornings. News update is next here on the Ideas Network. You're with us for the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Now it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here is producer Mary Kate McCoy with a story about embracing the outdoors.
Stress and uncertainty, we look for sources of comfort and connection. During the pandemic, that came in the form of two inflatable kayaks for Micey Vang of Sun Prairie and her family. Here she is with a story about paddling her way through the pandemic.
When the impact of COVID isolation really sank in, how did you pass your time? Did you bake your own bread, pretend the floor was lava, grow your own vegetables, or adopt a pet? I confess, I did partake in some, okay, admittedly all, of these ventures. What my family and I also did was rediscover the natural beauty Wisconsin has to offer. We have always committed to filling our days with adventure and had a hard time staying put indoors. But having the world closed down truly opened our eyes to appreciate the beauty Wisconsin offers outdoors. Sometimes within a few minutes' drive from home or a few minutes' drive from the state's borders. To discover beyond what we could from a drive or even on foot, my family and I took to the waters. My husband and I got our hands on a pair of inflatable kayaks. We would keep the rolled-up kayaks in the car, stop by any suitable body of water, inflate them, plop our girls in with us, and go for a nice, quiet paddle. This immediately transformed the hustle and bustle of land life into a quiet, peaceful experience on the water. Wisconsin waterways are special. Just about all navigable waters allow for public access, which is different from some of our neighboring states. Wisconsin is home to over 12,600 rivers and streams, creating more than 84,000 miles of flowing waters. While we may not be ready for a gradient beyond that of a lazy river, even the calm and stillness of gentle streams can offer physical challenge, excitement, or adventure. Gently paddling through, you notice scenery, animals, and sounds that you typically would not. There is something about quietly flowing through water that makes you a part of the surroundings, not just a visitor. When I walk through instead, I feel I'm imposing my heavy footsteps, leaving my footprint trail and evidence of my presence. In the water, we can paddle closely up to turtles on a log, herons and cranes in a marsh, and even share a shallow stream with fish swimming alongside you. Family dynamics are a bit different too. I'm usually stuck sharing my kayak with my younger daughter. I know better than to think that she would help paddle. In fact, I don't even bother giving her a paddle. The most memorable quote from all our kayaking is made by that younger daughter of mine. "You do all the paddling, Mama. I'll enjoy the view." What's also interesting, and psychologists will attest to this, is that when you're not face-to-face with your child, sometimes they speak more freely with you. It's like having a deep conversation while going for a drive, magnified times 10 when you're together in a kayak out in nature. Kids speak more easily of their most recent dreams, tussles on the playground, or conversations with their best friend. They use parts of their brain that are oftentimes turned off during their long stints with their tablets and other electronics. They also connect with nature and process things like what impact we have on the environment when we litter, or why everyone passing by on the water seems to always be in a happy mood. The pace of the world is starting to pick up again. While the journey through a pandemic will have its ups and downs before we fully recover, my family and I plan to continue on our winding journey through the waters of Wisconsin to slow things down a little and really take in how much Wisconsin has to offer.
Micey Vang of Sun Prairie brought us that story about paddling her way through the pandemic. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and PBS Wisconsin in partnership with Wisconsin Humanities. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. Find more Wisconsin Life at wisconsinlife.org and on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. I'm Mary Kate McCoy.
And now to redistricting, where the People's Maps Commission, appointed by Governor Evers, has come out with their final proposal. It's a far cry from the Republican maps unveiled last month. In a tour around the state yesterday, Evers declared he will veto GOP maps.
As a former teacher, I'll just say this. Clearly, they didn't understand the assignment. Somehow Republicans prepared gerrymandered maps that some have described even more gerrymandered than the ones that are in existence at this point in time.
Your questions about the redistricting process, 800-642-1234. Laurel White is Wisconsin Public Radio's State Capitol reporter, co-hosts the WPR Politics podcast. Laurel, welcome back.
Good morning, Kate. Thanks for having me.
Good morning. Let's start with the governor's statewide press tour yesterday. We just heard a bit of it. He had stops in Madison, Eau Claire, Brookfield. He'll join Mayor Katie Rosenberg in Wausau this morning. What is the message he's sending on the people's maps and redistricting?
It's a pretty consistent message that we've heard from the governor since he created this People's Maps Commission several months ago, which is that this was the fair way to draw maps through a commission of appointed individuals, not lawmakers, and that the product of this commission is what the legislature should be taking up during the redistricting process. He says these maps are more fair, they're more balanced, they're more competitive for lawmakers and districts across the state. So he's really kind of making that consistent argument and a final push for lawmakers to consider these maps instead of ones they've proposed.
When you look at these maps, how are they different than what Republicans are proposing?
So it's interesting. These maps have gone through a few different iterations. The final version that was released yesterday was the third version from the People's Maps Commission. And they do still have Republican majorities because of some of the dynamics in Wisconsin state politics and the geography of Wisconsin. But they do look different than the Republican maps. And those differences, proponents say, boil down to districts that are less, quote unquote, safe for a particular candidate in a race because of the demographics of the area, the makeup of the area, the geography of the area, and that people want those competitive races so they don't feel like they're going to the polls and their vote doesn't matter.
Remind us where we are in the process, Laurel, of drawing these political boundaries.
So we're kind of objectively sort of in the middle, I would say. Okay, we're kind of smack dab in the middle. So we got these People's Maps Commission maps. We have the maps from the Republican-controlled legislature. There's been a public hearing on the Republican maps. And those are the maps that Republicans say they're going to move officially through the legislative process. So the next step in the process is for a committee vote, and then those will go to the floor for a vote by the full assembly and the full Senate. And then they'll be sent to Governor Evers' desk. And if Republicans don't make changes to them, he says he's going to veto them. So they'll kind of follow the legislative process. They will follow the legislative process, as we kind of see bills follow the legislative process. That has to play out. And then likely we're going to end up in courts, and that could stretch on for quite a while.
And we're going to touch on the litigation that is moving in just a moment. But what did you hear from the people who were at the public hearing and the hundreds who gathered at the Capitol last week to voice their thoughts on the Republicans' plans for these maps?
It was a real parade of people. I mean, there were a lot of folks there at the Capitol to testify. Hundreds of people, they filled the hearing room, they kind of spilled out into the hallways of the Capitol, and they all spoke against the maps. There were only two people that spoke in favor of the maps at this public hearing, and those were the two leaders of the state legislature, Assembly Speaker Robin Voss and Senate Majority Leader Devin LeMahieu. So there was a lot of criticism at this public hearing. And basically what they were arguing is sort of what you've heard from the governor, is that the Republican maps are unfair. People don't feel empowered to go to the polls because they feel like their vote's not going to matter. Another thing that the governor said yesterday is lawmakers don't have kind of an incentive to follow the will of the people on certain issues because they feel like they're safely entrenched in the Capitol, that they don't need to listen to public opinion on things. And that was really what you heard from that testimony, is that people are frustrated. They want the maps to be drafted in a different way than they've been drafted, and it looks like they're going to be drafted this time.
So moving on to the courts, the litigation that you're seeing, the state Supreme Court heard arguments Monday in the suit that seeks to toss out contracts that the Republican lawmakers entered into with these private law firms in anticipation of legal battles over redistricting. So there's back and forth on this contracts issue. What is the high court weighing here?
So they're basically deciding whether the legislature has that authority to hire private lawyers to represent them in redistricting. It's gone back and forth. The first decisions were based on, you know, is this case far enough along in the process for lawmakers to have lawyers yet? So that's kind of continuing to evolve. But as that is happening, sort of the kind of a procedural question about representation and logistics in a way, we do have parallel cases going on, both in the state Supreme Court and in federal court, over the maps themselves, that Republicans, or the map making process rather, because we just got the maps themselves. So we've had arguments from liberal groups that have filed a federal lawsuit, for example, that say the current maps in Wisconsin aren't constitutional, and if we don't get them replaced quickly, that's going to be a problem for the 2022 elections, and that courts need to step in sort of immediately because of the likely partisan gridlock over this next set of maps. So that argument was filed several weeks ago now, and there's a similar case in state court. And there's kind of questions about jurisdiction between state and federal.
Yeah. And
those cases.
I was going to just jump in there on jurisdiction. I'm trying to understand what courts would ultimately draw maps, because the federal three-judge panel kept a trial date, on map intervention, if you will, for late January. But the state Supreme Court has decided to handle a redistricting lawsuit instead of federal courts. So what courts are in play on map drawing?
That's the million-dollar question, I think, for this map-making process, because it's very, very, very likely that these maps are going to end up in the courts. And so the big question is, which courts? Is it going to be federal court? Is it going to be state court? Historically, it has been federal court that have handled map-making issues in Wisconsin. This isn't unusual for maps to end up in courts. It happens when we have divided government in the Capitol. They can't decide. They can't agree on what they want maps to look like. So I believe 1964 was the last time that the state Supreme Court handled a redistricting issue. Since then, it's always been federal court. But Republicans are really pushing this time for the Wisconsin Supreme Court, for state court to take jurisdiction in this case. It's a strong sign that they think that they've got a good chance before the state Supreme Court. There is a conservative majority there. So that's going to be a big part of this battle moving forward, jurisdiction and where these maps end up.
Yeah, something to watch. WPR State Capitol reporter Laurel White getting us up to speed midweek on developments moving through the Capitol. How do you feel about the results of the Legislative Audit Bureau's 2020 election review? What are your top takeaways? What questions do you have about the findings? Still time, 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Laurel White here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Glad you could be here. Wisconsin's chief elections officer, Administrator Megan Wolf, was on our State Capitol Report Monday when she said her job is to correct the record when baseless claims are made about the election system in Wisconsin. Republicans, including Assembly Speaker Robin Voss, have called for her resignation. Here's a bit of her response.
I won't be leaving, which is not the easy choice. Being nonpartisan in this hyper-partisan political environment is incredibly difficult.
What do you want to know about the timeline and nature of the Republican 2020 election investigations? 800-642-1234. We have WPR State Capitol reporter Laurel White, who stays with us. Laurel, you just heard from Administrator Megan Wolf here. You were reporting on her position as well. What do you see out of Wolf and these investigations that are mounting of the 2020 election?
Well, obviously, we got some pretty strong comments from Megan Wolf this week in response to calls for her to step down. There has been pretty sharp Republican criticism of Wolf and the state elections agency following a few different things. So first of all is the nonpartisan audit from the Legislative Audit Bureau that came out last week, and that found some things that the Elections Commission didn't do well, allegedly didn't do well in 2020, from not having some state policies set that they were supposed to have set under state law, not following some state laws when they issued guidance to clerks about things like, stopping counting ballots on election night if they needed to under certain circumstances and reconvening in the morning, things like that. So there was a lot of criticism of how the Elections Commission oversaw the 2020 election after that report. And then there has been, kind of a new conversation about voting in nursing homes after the Racine County Sheriff held a press conference saying he has concerns about how voting was conducted at one nursing home in his community during the 2020 election. So certainly Wolf has been under a lot of fire, and that's really her pushing back and saying that these criticisms aren't fair, that the election was run well. She has acknowledged that there are ways in which they can and will improve. But she's really coloring this as a partisan battle, as Republicans really I think the word is scapegoat, are kind of scapegoating her inappropriately in trying to make things look more dire, really, than they were.
One thing she noted, too, was the results of the legislative audit were normally supposed to be reviewed by the commission. And Wolf said, she wasn't able to comment or provide any sort of context for what was going to be in the audit before it was published.
That's right. And that's a really important point and something we're going to be watching very closely, because one of her first responses was there are some inaccuracies in this nonpartisan Legislative Audit Bureau report, because the Elections Commission wasn't allowed to see it, kind of weigh in, provide clarification. And that's something that normally happens with these nonpartisan audits from this legislative body. So we talked to her about that this week. She said that they're working on a memo that will outline kind of all of the inaccuracies that they saw in the report, and also what they can do in the wake of the report to respond, make changes, et cetera. So we're going to see a lot of kind of concrete, very detailed things coming out over the next several weeks. We've just got to kind of wait for them at this point.
And meanwhile, Senate Republicans launch another investigation of their own of the 2020 elections. And, I found it interesting that Senate Majority Leader LaMahieu would install State Senator Kathy Bernier to lead the probe. I mean, since she chairs the Senate Elections Committee, but, here's someone who was Chippewa County Clerk for, a dozen years or so, and has been really trying to be on the forefront of teaching fellow lawmakers the mechanics of running elections. What do you make of this probe?
So it is certainly she brings a perspective to this investigation. Obviously, as someone that has been a former election official, and she's talked about that a lot. This probe is really interesting because as I've talked to Senator Bernier about it, she says it's going to be pretty narrowly focused in the beginning, and they're looking at one part of the Legislative Audit Bureau report that had specifically to do with handing over documents during the Audit Bureau's investigation. And the report says that officials in Milwaukee and Madison didn't provide auditors with physical access to some of the documents that they wanted to see. And Republicans have really raised concerns about that, saying, well, they shouldn't have withheld any documents. They should have provided everything that auditors wanted. Meanwhile, the election officials in those communities are saying, well, we did provide access just under certain circumstances, or we provided access to everything that they asked for. So there are definitely two sides to the story on the whole document access aspect of that investigation. And that's what that inquiry is going to be looking into.
We're talking with Laurel White, WPR State Capitol reporter, getting up to speed on these election investigations, their status, and what lawmakers are saying. 800-642-1234 for your thoughts. So tell us about on the assembly side of the chamber, Speaker Robin Voss's investigation. What is the status of that one?
So this is the investigation that Speaker Voss unveiled over the summer at the state Republican convention. It's being headed by a former conservative state Supreme Court Justice, Michael Gableman. It's, you know, kind of like redistricting. You asked me earlier, where are we in the process? I feel like we're kind of in the middle of the process of this election investigation. Justice Gableman, former Justice Gableman, has issued some subpoenas for information and for testimony from election officials across the state. Those have hit some snags. There have been some modifications to particularly when people are going to come in and provide in-person testimony related to the probe. There's actually a lawsuit pending about the circumstances of people coming in and providing testimony, whether that's going to be in public or in private, who has to come in, things like that. So that's definitely an evolving conversation. The original deadline for this audit was supposed to be this fall, was supposed to be October.
Wasn't it supposed to be in concert with the legislative audit release?
It was supposed to be at about the same time, right? They were supposed to be kind of fall releases. And now, according to the speaker and former Justice Gableman, we're looking more toward kind of the end of the year. They needed more time.
I wonder, does more time then mean more taxpayer money very quickly as we have to wrap up?
Absolutely. So the budget right now is about $700,000 in taxpayer money, and we haven't gotten an answer yet if they're going to need more money to extend it out. So that's something that we're going to obviously keep a really close eye on.
Laurel, thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
Laurel White is Wisconsin Public Radio State Capitol reporter, co-hosts the WPR Politics podcast. Just ahead, a look at the rise of twins born worldwide. Are you a twin? Are you the parent of twins like I am? Join the conversation, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.